Matthew chapter 5, we'll read verse 27 down to verse 30, all right? Matthew chapter number 5, verse 27 through 30, and we'll read it together out loud. When I say begin, let's begin together. Ready? Begin. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. You may be seated. Now we have been dealing now with the second section of the Sermon on the Mount. The first section was the Beatitude, and the second section was kind of gave us an introduction going on into this next section where Jesus Christ is basically saying, this is what you've heard, it hath been said, and basically he's going to give them some of the commandments, not all of the Ten Commandments, but some particular commandments. Last week we dealt with thou shalt not kill. This evening we're looking at thou shalt not commit adultery, and those are part of the Ten Commandments that we find in Exodus chapter number 20. Now, in the introduction, Jesus Christ knows of the criticism that he's about to face when he said that I'm not come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And so he knew that by what he was going to teach and preach, that the accusation would come and say, you are destroying the law. You're destroying Moses. You're destroying the prophets. And Jesus Christ says, I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And he goes on, and throughout this text in this chapter, he basically says, you have heard that it was said by them of old time, but I say unto you. And he's going to do that through that passage. And we dealt with the first one last week from verse 21 down to verse number 26, where Jesus Christ deals with, again, the spirit of the law of thou shalt not kill. But if you remember, let's quiz here, just to review from last week. What was the one word that communicates the spirit of the law, thou shalt not kill? Anybody remember? Now, what's the spirit of the law? What was Jesus Christ teaching through that? Remember? Anybody? Reconciliation, right? The spirit of the law. You remember he says, those that say, Raka, or thou fool, in other words, words of hatred and contempt for somebody else. But he goes on the next step and says, but I say unto you, before you bring your gift to the altar, go and be reconciled to thy brother. In other words, in your heart, there ought to be nothing between you and somebody else if you expect to worship God and your offering be pleasing to God. And so, again, God is emphasizing, Jesus Christ in his teaching is emphasizing the heart, which is in contrast to what the Pharisees and the scribes were teaching, that it was all an outward show, a display only by keeping the letter of the law. Now, in this chapter, again, as we've been dealing here, Jesus Christ is going to quote the law, some of the commandments there, and each time he's going to quote the law, he will follow it with, but I say unto you. Why? Because as the scribes and the Pharisees were teaching those laws, there was a certain understanding of those laws, but Jesus Christ is going to interpret those laws as they were intended to be interpreted. You see, Jesus Christ is not seeking to destroy the law. He is not seeking to discredit the law. He is not doing away with the law. He is not rewriting the law. He is not reinterpreting the law. Jesus Christ is simply interpreting the law in its original intent. That had been missed for many generations. Now again, Jesus Christ is addressing his disciples, as we see in the beginning of the chapter, because of he's trying to tear down the walls of all the things that they had been taught for all those years, and he's trying to build out back a wall that is the correct wall. Okay? Now, Christ's argument here, again, are not with Moses. They're not with the law. His arguments are against the scribes and the Pharisees who had perverted the true teaching of the law. Now we come here to verse 27, and we read those verses, and we deal with the law here, the command of thou shalt not commit adultery. That's a serious subject, especially in our day. Because it is so rampant, these verses here are very relevant to our present society, and specifically because we're dealing with the spirit of the law, not just the act of adultery. Now, the Pharisees only had an outward show of religion. That's all they were concerned about. Jesus Christ told them plainly that you're concerned with the outside, but inside you are dead and black. So his arguments here, as we see, Jesus makes it clear that this type of righteousness, the type of the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, was not enough. That's what he says in verse 20, right? He told his disciples, "For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." And so, obviously, what the scribes and the Pharisees were doing, which to the eyes of the people thought, these are the greatest religious people. If anybody is going to go to heaven, it's surely the scribes and the Pharisees. And Jesus Christ says, except it exceeds that, then you are going to no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now, we have to have an understanding of what the philosophy of the Pharisees was. You see, what was important to them and what was important to Christ is completely different. What was important to the Pharisees is that they placed the emphasis on what you had and what you did. They had influence. They had a certain status. They had wealth. And they made sure that everyone knew they displayed their wealth, their status, their influence publicly. In other words, if you had a big bucket, a metal bucket standing outside of the temple, the Pharisee would basically come, get his coin, and put it up in the air, and then drop it so that it would make as much noise as possible so that everybody would know he's a giver. Wow, look, did you just see how much he gave? That's the type of life they lived. They would walk around with their nose ups and with their garbs, and as people would see them come down, they would get out of the way. Why? Because they're important people. And so their philosophy was, look, it's all about what you have and what you do and what people see. But Jesus' philosophy is different. You see, what was important to Christ was not what you have and what you do. What is important to Christ, he always placed the emphasis on what you are. Why? Because what you are determines what you do. Now, not the other way around. What you do doesn't determine what you are, but what you are determines what you do. Now, the Pharisee's philosophy, promotes an outward show. But the other, Jesus Christ's philosophy, promotes the inward sincerity of the heart, which, by the way, the scribes and the Pharisees were missing. You know, 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6, Paul says, and I mentioned this verse last week, but it's important and pertinent to the message this evening. He says, "Who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit? For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life." So again, the scribes and the Pharisees, what had they done to the law? They had killed the law and what God intended it to be. You see, it's not just the letter, it's the Spirit. Because the letter kills the law, but the Spirit brings the law alive. Do you see that? In other words, there's the idea today in society and even in churches that, well, we don't live under the law anymore. Well, yeah, we don't live under the consequences of the law, but God still expects us to keep the Ten Commandments, doesn't He? Of course He does. Why? Because Jesus Christ here is bringing, and he talks about here, the Spirit of the law, not just the letter. And you know what the Spirit of the law makes the law? It makes the law alive to us. Not like the scribes and the Pharisees were teaching. That's why the people says, when they heard Jesus Christ out, he teaches as one that has authority and not as the scribes and the Pharisees. You see, the command, thou shalt not commit adultery, had been reduced to the mere physical act. They had taken the letter of the law and reduced it to one particular matter.
Martin Lloyd-Jones in his commentary says, the whole purpose of the law, as Paul reminds us, was to show the exceeding sinfulness of sin. But by misunderstanding it in this way, the Pharisees had nullified it. Nowhere, perhaps, do we have such a terrible exposure of sin as it really is in the words of our Lord as this particular point. You see, the scribes and the Pharisees had never read the Ten Commandments properly. And Jesus Christ is setting the record straight and says, this is how we properly read the commandments. You see, the Pharisees thought this: as long as you did not commit the act of adultery, you are not guilty. You get that philosophy? As long as we did not commit the act of adultery, then we're not guilty. They tried to limit the application of the divine commands to as small and a narrow area as possible. And by the way, people still do that today. And they're not Pharisees with guards walking around. That's what the Pharisee says. But you see what the Lord says here in this passage? If you look on a woman with lust, you have already committed adultery, and you are guilty. Wow, that's a whole other level than the scribes and the Pharisees were teaching, isn't it? You see, when Jesus Christ comes on the scene, he sets up a much higher standard. Do we get that? Today, well, we don't live under the law anymore. That's right. We live by a higher standard than the law. A much higher standard. In other words, you see, the most religious people of the day, the scribes and the Pharisees, lived by the letter of the law, but Jesus Christ comes and says, you disciple, you see these people as keeping the letter of the law, and you see those people as the most religious possible people on earth, but I say to you, there is a much higher standard, and I expect you to live by that standard. Wow. Let me illustrate the problem of the day. A few years back when we were hosting a family in our home, they had children, by the way. While walking in the kitchen, the husband saw a picture on the refrigerator of another woman. This was in our house. And he says the following to his wife as he looked at that picture of a woman. By the way, it was a picture of that woman and her husband. He looks at the picture of the woman, turns to his wife and says, why can't you look like that? You know what the attitude of the day is? Looking doesn't hurt anybody. Or it's okay to look as long as you don't touch. Such a philosophy is what has made our society so degenerate. And this is the attitude of the day. Our society is filled with lust, and you hear time and time again, even people that call themselves Christians, in that instance, Christian people who say things like that. And that should never be accepted. That should never be accepted in the Christian language. Now, as we deal with this passage, I want to look at several things. First of all, I want us to deal, first of all, as we see in the verses, verse 27, we see the sin of adultery. Jesus Christ did not come away to do away with the law. He came to fulfill the law and to give a deeper explanation of what the law is teaching. And so here verse 27 says, Jesus, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, the sin of adultery is a very wicked sin. Now, let me pause and say this. All sin is vile and wicked in the sight of God. I think we all understand that. But not every sin has such a devastating effect as the sin of adultery. In other words, adultery is explained as when a married person joins in a physical relationship with a person other than their spouse. However, we must view adultery here as including all immorality, whether it involves married people or single people. All immorality is condemned by the seventh commandment. And it involves all immorality. Why? Because we're dealing with the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. The scribes and the Pharisees says, oh, look, I've never committed the act of adultery, and therefore I'm guiltless. And so we understand that this law of adultery is speaking of, referring to all immorality. Now, if we have any doubt as to what God says about it, let's go to Proverbs chapter 2. Proverbs chapter number 2. Things today are made so light of. People talk about adultery today and people commit adultery as if, well, they made a mistake. Or they just couldn't help themselves. Well, let's just look for a few moments at what God says. Proverbs chapter 2, verse number 10. I'd like for you to read. I'm not going to preach tonight. I'm just going to read through the book of Proverbs. Okay? And let's allow God to say what He wants to say. Notice verse 10. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh forward things, who leave the paths of uprightness, who walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths. To deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger, which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the God of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go in unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. That thou mayest walk in the way of good men, and keep the paths of the righteous. For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it, but the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressor shall be rooted out of it. Go to chapter number 5, Proverbs chapter number 5. Notice verse number 1. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. So here he says, listen, pay attention. Young men, middle-aged men, older men, women, pay attention. Here's wisdom from God. Verse 3. For the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life. Her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger, that thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Go to chapter number 6, if you would. Go down to verse 23. The Bible says, for the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instructions are the way of life. To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. Now let's just stop here. You see what Solomon says here? This is the spirit of the law. It's not just the act. He says, notice, lust not after her beauty in thine heart. Just keep reading here. Down to verse 33. For by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her, shall not be innocent. Men, do not despise a thief, if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all of the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. Proverbs 7, verse 1. My son, keep my words, and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy finger, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked through the casement, and behold, among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went to the way of her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black of the dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with an attire of an harlot, and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offering with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings and tapestry, with carved works and with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with love. For the good man is not at home. He is gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield, and the flattering of her lips, she forced him. She goeth after the straight way, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Go to chapter number 9, verse 13. A foolish woman is clamorous, she is simple and knoweth nothing. For she sitteth at the door of her house, on a seat in the high places of the city, to call passengers who go right on their ways. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. And as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. Do we understand what God says about it? Adultery is great wickedness and a sin against God. You know, Joseph put it right. When Bathsheba came to him and the Bible, she cast her eyes on him and she wanted to lie with him. And Joseph replied, says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You see, adultery is not a casual mistake. It is not a misunderstanding. It is not beyond our control. You know, people today call it different things, almost minimizing the sin of adultery, which is great wickedness. They say, well, he's having an affair. No, call it great wickedness in the sight of God. Some people call it alternative lifestyle. Some people call it live-in marriage, or even some people call it love. But Joseph had it right when he called it great wickedness against God. Through the pages of Proverbs that we just read, adultery promotes dishonesty. The immoral person cannot be trusted. Immoral persons lie about their immorality, and they will lie about everything. Immorality promotes deceit. Adultery also promotes disease. Proverbs 5:11 says, and thou shalt mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. You see, many diseases come from immorality. Adultery also produces debt. Proverbs chapter 6 verse 26 says, by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. By the way, many people have left because of their immorality with mountains of debt because of all of the things that they have to go through. Adultery also brings dishonor. Proverbs 6:32 says, whoso committeth adultery with a woman, a wound and a dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. Immorality brings dishonor. The worst thing about this sin, and any sin, is that it dishonors God. Now we could stop and say, the Pharisees, as they hear this, thou shalt not commit adultery, you would hear the scribes and the Pharisees say, amen! But now he goes further. He goes to the next step. So we not only see the sin of adultery, but number two, we see the source of adultery. He says in verse 28 of Matthew 5, but I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. You see, Christ's teaching here included a wider and a deeper application of the sin than did the religious leaders of that day. The scribes and the Pharisees did not mention the heart and the eye relationship to the command, and thereby they limited the application of the command against adultery. You see, holiness is a matter of the heart and not merely a matter of conduct. It is not only a man's deeds that count, but it is his desires. Not only must he not commit, but he must not covet. One commentator put it this way, he says, the Pharisees and scribes had reduced the commandment which prohibits adultery to the mere physical act of adultery, and again they imagined that as long as they were not actually guilty of the act itself, the commandment had nothing to say to them, and they were perfectly innocent as far as it was concerned. You see, sin is not merely a matter of actions and of deeds, it is something within the heart that leads to the actions. If a man allows himself to gaze upon a woman till his appetites and thoughts are promoted, then the holy law of God judges him to be guilty of adultery and also subjected to its curse. You know, many who claim that they would never commit such a sin, but yet they do it by proxy. You see, the fact that we have not committed adultery does not mean that we're guiltless. If we are satisfied with the fact that we have not committed this sin, the act, then we are wrong. Why? Because that's exactly how the Pharisees and scribes saw it. I'm not guilty. I have not committed the act. And Jesus says, what about your thoughts? Let's go to Romans chapter 7, if you would please turn with me. We have the explanation of someone that used to be a Pharisee, and I think he gives us a pretty good explanation in Romans chapter number 7, if you please turn there. Notice verse 12 of Romans chapter 7. Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and just and good. Was then that which is good made death unto me? God forbid, but sin, that it might appear sin, working death in me by that which is good, that sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. Now, in this passage here, the Apostle Paul, we know before his salvation, was a Pharisee. Before his salvation, he emphasized the letter of the law and neglected the spiritual of the law, the spirit of the law. Before his salvation, he was only thinking of the law in terms of actions only. Go back, notice to verse 7 of chapter 7. Notice what he says. He says, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin, but by the law, for I had not known lust, except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. You see what Paul says here? He finally understood at salvation that the law had always stressed the importance of the heart. Why? Because what? The commandment says, thou shalt not commit adultery. But then we go to the last commandment. And what does the last commandment say? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. So do you see? Paul says, look, I had not committed adultery. He says, but I had not known the law until I read, thou shalt not covet. Why? Because that's the spirit of the law. You see, it was not just the action. It was the desire of the heart, the lust of the heart, the coveting, the desiring something that was not yours. He says, I had not known the law, except it had said, thou shalt not covet. One commentator says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Of course not. But is it in our hearts? Is it in our imagination? Do we like it? God forbid that any of us should be able to look at this holy law of God and feel satisfied. If we do not feel unclean at this moment, God have mercy upon us. If we have conceivably, if we can conceivably be satisfied with our lives because we have never committed the act of adultery or of murder or any other of these things, I say that we do not know ourselves nor the blackness and the foulness of our own hearts. Why? Because he's dealing with the spirit of the law and everything that falls under the umbrella of murder. What is hatred, bitterness towards somebody else? Then you're guilty of murder. Lust after someone, then you're guilty of adultery. That's the spirit of the law. You see, as Jesus Christ is giving this law, do you see where that draws us back to? It draws me back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You see, the law of God and the spirit of the law should bring us back to the Beatitudes and say, oh God, we are nothing without you, and we are guilty, we are not guiltless of breaking your law. And it brings us right back to Jesus Christ. Lest we be discouraged, Jesus Christ, who is holy and spotless and pure, took our guilt upon himself, and we have been washed by his precious blood, and we have been blessed with a new heart. Praise his name. So, that's the source of adultery. You see, Jesus Christ tearing down this wall, that's not just the act, it's the desire, the lust of your eyes, what's going on inside your heart, and you're coveting for something that is not God's will for your life. So we see the sin of adultery, the source of adultery, but thirdly, we see the stopping of adultery. Notice what he says, as we keep our reading in verse 29. He says, and if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right eye offend thee, cut it off. Right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. It's pretty radical, isn't it? Now, lest we get misunderstanding, I'm going to give the explanation here. That's pretty strong. If you have a problem with your eye, pluck it out. If you have a problem with your hand, cut it off. Now, let's look at the text for a moment, and let's see if we could identify what Jesus Christ is saying. The Bible says, notice in verse 29, and if thy right eye, what's the next word? Offend thee. Again, he says in verse 30, and if thy right hand offend thee. You see, the word offend means to cause to stumble and fall. To cause to stumble and fall. Vincent, in his word study, says, if your eye or your hand serve as an obstacle or a trap to ensnare, to make you fall into immoral conduct, then you should pluck it out and cut it off. So the word offend means to cause you to stumble, to entrap you, to ensnare you into this sin that we're talking about. So he's speaking of two avenues. That is the eye and the hand. With the eye you look at and with the hand you touch. The eye you look at something and lust for something and covet for something that is not yours to have. And with your hand you touch and you take something that is not yours to have. And those are the two avenues, he says, that you have to deal with. And he says, and if those cause you to entrap you, if your eye causes you to entrap you, entraps you, enslaves you, and if your hand entraps you, then you need to do away with them. Now, Jesus Christ here is not using literal language. Let me say that again so there's no misunderstanding. Jesus Christ is not using literal language. Jesus Christ here uses a hyperbole. A hyperbole is a statement not meant to be taken literally. It is an extreme picture to convey the importance of a serious truth. Now, Jesus Christ did that, for example, with this simple statement when he told Nicodemus, you must be born again. Well, how did Nicodemus interpret it? Literally. Well, how can I go back to my mother's womb and be born again? Well, it was... You have to understand what Jesus Christ was trying to communicate. Remember, Jesus Christ called Herod a fox. Well, we understand that Herod is not literally a fox. And so this is not uncommon for Jesus Christ to use such language, but we have to understand what he's trying to communicate here. Because Jesus, again, he is not saying here that you literally have to cut off your hand and you really have to pluck out your eye. How do we know that? Because of what we find in the text. Think about it. No one has ever cut their hand because of their lust. Do you know of anybody that has done that? You may know, I don't. No one has plucked out their eye because of their lust. You know, there is also no study that shows that one-eyed people lust less than two-eyed people. There's no study that shows that one-handed people lust less and touch less than two-handed people. What I'm trying to tell you is Jesus Christ is simply communicating the seriousness of the offense and the avenues which are used to commit those offenses. And he says you have to deal with those things. You see, the lesson here is not as much a literal physical amputation, but a parting with anything that leads to the sin of the heart. In other words, purity is worth the pain. You see, if one eye is gone, you can still see with the other eye. And if one hand is gone, you can still use the other hand. So the principle needs to be emphasized here that it is more than a literal action. Robertson says, it is not mutilating of the body that Christ enjoins, but control of the body against sin. So Jesus Christ goes all the way extreme for us to understand the importance of us controlling our eyes and our hands. By application, when he says, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. You see, in other words, if you follow the application, well, if you cut off your hand because it ensnares you, your hand cannot be separated from your body and your hand cannot go to hell and you go to heaven. Does that make sense? So it's the language that is used shows of the importance of controlling yourself. He says again, if thy right eye offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. You see, throw it away. Don't keep it near. So the lesson for us here is this. We must therefore part and separate from anything that causes and ensnares us into the sin of adultery or anything that is connected to immorality. That's what he says. You know, 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, John says this, his commandments are not grievous. They're not grievous. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 6 says this, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will from the heart. What is Jesus Christ trying to teach? The importance of being right within our hearts. So the application, if you would, the stopping of adultery is this. If there's anything in our lives that brings about, promotes, emphasizes lust, then we should do everything we do to separate from whatever ensnares us. Someone may say, remember there's a Bible college student who told me he was struggling with pornography. And he said, I need help. What do I do? I said, well, what means do you use to watch pornography? He said, well, my laptop. So you know what I told him? Get rid of your laptop. Get rid of it. If you can't control it, then do away with it. Now, there's two things, because obviously he has to fix his heart. In other words, you can't stay away from the computer forever, and it's a tool. And by the way, in Bible college, you were required to have a laptop or else you couldn't complete the class. And so I understand, but the principle here is, look, you have to deal with your heart. But if there are things that you keep doing over and over again that entrap you, that ensnare you, then you have to cut those things off. You have to separate from them. You have to take a, if you would, an extreme measure to keep from that sin ensnaring you. That's what Jesus Christ is teaching here. Take the extreme measures you need to take to guard your heart from ever committing that sin. You know, television today is filled with filth. Filth. The language, the themes, it's all filled with filth. And you cannot keep a wholesome mind with watching those things incessantly. You cannot. You think about the devices, and I'm talking about more than just things that you watch. I'm thinking even, articles or even books that we read. A lot of times we make excuses, well, let me read this article that deals with this particular subject. Let me read this page of the magazine, and it talks about an affair. And you know what it is a lot of times we will say, well, I'm kind of educationally curious. No, we are lusting after those things because our imagination is running wild with those things. And we say, well, what if that was in my life? And so we get curious, and our curiosity takes us down a road where we ought to never go. Make some radical decisions to prevent from your heart going astray. I'm not guilty of committing the act. That is not what Jesus is saying. You see, Jesus is dealing with this. And this is the message, the title of the message. He's dealing with the adulterer at heart. The adulterer at heart. And that was in that day. How much more does that apply to our day? You got banners everywhere. Commercials. I mean, even social media. You have Facebook. Now there's ads on all those social media. You have a Twitter account. I'd like to say, what is that? There's ads that flash by those things. You've got to keep your heart. Don't allow yourself to linger on things that bring your heart down a path that is leading you to break that commandment in the sight of God. We have to be careful. That's the standard of Jesus Christ. Standard. I understand that in our world, it's very difficult to escape all the wickedness, all the things you hear, all the things you see. But you know what we can control is the lingering and the thinking. And the mind and the heart that strays down paths that we may think, I'm not hurting anyone. But just as that married couple walked into our house and made that comment, my heart was broken to think of where that mind and that heart had strayed in a joking manner. Making light of it. And by the way, the sin nature will do that. To kind of ease our conscience, we'll joke it off, laugh it off, and act like I haven't done anything wrong. May the Lord help us to see the spirit of the law, the adulterer at heart.